This is F1 Debrief minus the baubles. Coming up this week, we discuss the FIA elections and don't get too depressed about it. Plus, we catch up with some excellent feedback. We haven't done an F1 debrief that wasn't about a race since August the 17th.
Really?
I think it came as quite a surprise to some people in the comments.
I hadn't, that had not occurred to me at all.
No, we've spent our weekends doing Sidepod Film Club, Sidepod Radio, Moving House, we did a mini-series.
How good are we at procrastinating?
We are really good. Anyone would think we didn't want to do a debrief.
It's not true. We do. Let's get on with it.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Abu Dhabi as they have sold out their tickets for the GP next weekend. CEO Richard Cregan said, "We've had an amazing response locally, nationally and internationally, and every ticket has been sold." That is very good, especially considering it's basically a non-championship race now.
I think we should doff our cap to Richard Cregan. He left Toyota and it seemed like a strange move at the time. He went off to sort out this race, and I think he's done a fantastic job of getting everything done on time and for selling out the event.
It's been a bad week for Donington, who finally admitted that they couldn't get the funding together to host the British GP. Their bond scheme failed, and although the extended deadlines seem to keep happening, there are emergency discussions with Bernie ongoing. Silverstone immediately popped their head up and started talks with Mr. Ecclestone, but it's not at all clear how this situation is going to get sorted.
At some point, when this is all done and dusted, we need to look at how many deadlines Donington had in this process, because I believe Monday, which will be probably after the show has gone out, Monday is the next deadline in Donington's ongoing, never-ending and very, very boring saga of how they never managed to host a Formula One race.
It's been a good week for teams as the FIA have approved the change of the Monaco GP to bring it forward a week. There were concerns about the original calendar with Monaco and Turkey being a back-to-back. Now Monaco takes place on the 16th of May and becomes the second of a back-to-back with Spain.
It's the only sensible thing to do, and I can't imagine how the previous version of the calendar slipped out the way it was written, because it never made any sense and FOTA were always going to complain about it.
I don't want to do this last bad week. You can't make
Again,
me.
Again? Didn't we have this problem last week?
You can't make me.
What's it about this time?
It's been a bad week for Jake Humphrey because he hasn't been well after coming back from Brazil. Although, according to his blog, he may have caught it from a colleague who was last seen throwing up into a carry bag, which unfortunately contained a hole.
Oh dear. Can we have a new section? Vomit of the week. I think that's what we
really
need.
Not. So I'm not talking about throwing up anymore.
News and views.
So we've had a week to come to terms with our new champions. Have you done so?
Have I come to terms with it?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't a massive surprise. We've kind of expected this since, what, March? Was
Pretty
maybe
much.
April.
Yeah.
We've had there's been a lot of expectation on Jensen's shoulders, and he made a long season of it, really, considering he should have locked it out a lot sooner. And therefore, yes, I am coming to terms with it, although, as Bernie would say, nothing is official until the award ceremony in December.
He is such a killjoy. I can't believe it. He's
really
like,
is.
His quote that are supposed to be congratulations, they actually say, well, he's not world champion until the end of November.
Yes.
Stop partying.
Bernie is really upset that it hasn't gone to the last round, because the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix is a flagship race of the season, and he absolutely desperately wanted to see the season finale raced there. And in the past, some might argue that he's done his best to ensure that that's exactly what we have. But this year, it looks like it was out of his hands.
It didn't work out for him. It doesn't matter, though, because Button wasn't partying. He celebrated by himself.
Formula One champions are so boring.
I know. Was it last year that Hamilton had like one drink?
He partied all night. He didn't leave the party till 4 o'clock in the morning, having had one glass of champagne.
They are proper athletes, you know.
Oh my goodness.
Well,
there are no characters
Button
in Formula
said,
One.
Button said he went back to his hotel room and just smiled to himself all night.
Brilliant.
Rock and roll.
What a night out.
He also had to return to the UK, to the Bluewater Shopping Centre, which was a prior commitment. And I know some of the people from our comments went there to see him.
Yes, they did. I believe Bootneck, Daniel and Lou all turned up to see Jensen come home and receive the adulation from the home fans. The event had nothing to do with his championship win. It just happened to be a prior PR engagement that suddenly exploded out of control. And I think Virgin made the most of it.
They had to ramp up security, I bet.
They milked it for all it was worth. So far as I can tell, it was an event called Virgin Speed Week, and that involved the company promoting their fast broadband products in conjunction with the tie-up they have with Braun GP. And obviously, the team have been running the sponsorship on their car the whole of the season, and it looks like it was the last PR event that Johnson had to deal with. And he, just as he got back in the country, he rocked up at the Blue Water.
It was nice that he went to greet the fans, and he also went back to Brackley and celebrated with the people in the factory and had pictures in front of the trophies that he's won this year.
He did. And one question I was going to bring up, and this is completely, totally off a tangent, and I'm sure you haven't got this in your show notes or weren't expecting this at all. But curiously, it turns out that my mum is a closet Joe Sayward fan. And I didn't realise this, but she has listened to every single Aside with Joe podcast thus far, even though she's only listened to about four debriefs this year. But what she did point out to me was that Joe made a big point of talking about meeting Ross Brawn at, I believe, Chicago Airport upon leaving Brazil. Now, the question was, what on earth was Ross Brawn doing in Chicago? And why haven't you seen Ross Brawn celebrating with the team, with Jensen? And what's he been up to? Because it seems like he went from Brazil to America and then sort of vanished.
I haven't seen him.
No. Where is Ross Brawn? He is the team owner of the championship-winning constructor, and nobody, as far as I can tell, has seen him since Brazil.
Maybe he really, really partied.
He must have done, but what was he doing in Chicago?
Partying.
I didn't pick up on it at the time, so maybe next time we speak to Joe, we'll ask him. But Joe mentioned that Joe was going from Brazil to Chicago to France because that was the cheapest way home. And possibly Ross Brawn went Brazil to Chicago to England, and he just went home and he's just happy, and there's nothing to be drawn from it. But it does seem slightly unusual that the guy went to America.
Well, while you're stirring up controversies over there, you are in good company.
Okay.
Because the Daily Mail have also been doing such a thing.
Do not compare me to that newspaper.
There have been rumours that Button is negotiating his contract with Brawn.
He confirmed that at Blue Water. He said, now I'm the champion, I'm going to go ahead, and that's my next priority, is to sort out my contract for next year.
And there's talk that he wants more money, which is also fair enough.
Completely understandable.
He is the champion.
He took a pay cut this year in order to drive, because Brawn allegedly didn't have very much money. And now he feels he deserves a little bit more.
Well, the Daily Mail took that and twisted it completely and decided that he had signed up with Mercedes.
Exclusive!
Or he was thinking about it.
Exclusive news.
Yeah, they had the exclusive
of the story they made up
on the 23rd,
in their own heads.
On the 23rd of October, the exclusive headline was, secret plan for all British dream team of world champion Jenson Button and 2008 King Lewis Hamilton.
King?
Now, I missed the bit where Lewis became a king.
Wow! King Lewis.
Yeah, I thought that might have made more headlines along the way.
Okie dokie.
But anyway, less than 24 hours later, they quashed their own story.
With another exclusive. And the headline read?
Jenson Button turns his back on Dream Team with Lewis. And that interview just had some quotes from King Lewis.
Right.
That had nothing to do with anything, something to do with wind tunnels.
And absolutely no evidence to suggest that Jensen, A, had originally had any kind of dream team in mind,
nope.
Or B, had then turned his back on it almost 24 hours later.
I'm not sure that Jensen was mentioned in either of those stories, but I do like the idea of coming up with a story and then saying it's false 24 hours later just for content. I think we should start doing
that. Okay, exclusive.
Frank has signed with Ferrari.
Exclusive.
Maybe not.
We could do this all day. We could generate tons and tons and tons of content this way. Every single day, come up with an exclusive, the next day, quash it. Brilliant journalism.
Hello, it's Luigi. As you know, this week, Harry Vatnin lost the presidency to a Mr. Jean Todt. And if you don't know that by now, then surprise, I guess. And as you know, I am a Harry Vatnin fan, and it's a shame to see him lose. I'm a big gutted he lost, but I think as a Formula One fan, you've just got to hope that what John Todd has to offer is going to be for the best for Formula One. Let's be fair, he's not Max, but then again, he's John Todd, so it's kind of a balancing act. So yeah, it's a shame Harry Vatnin lost, but Let's see where it goes with Jean Todt. It's a little bit of... I'm kind of optimistic because his campaign was annoyingly good. But then I go back to the point, he's Jean Todt. And so I can't get it out of my mind. He could be called Frank something or another, and he would still be Jean Todt. So, yeah, let's see what happens with Mr. Todt and the FIA, and let's just hope that Michael Schumacher is not the F1 commissioner. I've got... that's annoying. Anyway, let's see what happens. Best of luck to Jean Todt. Oh, it's Jean Todt. Can't get out of my mind. Anyway, bye-bye.
It's been a bit of a week.
Yeah, poor Lukey can't get Jean Todt out of his mind.
No.
That's not a nice state to be in, is
it? That's horrible, really. Has to be said, not massively unexpected a victory, was it?
No, well, the other interesting thing is that on Friday, we set up a separate breakout thread for the FIA news, and I had my daily thread as a happy place, but actually, there wasn't that much talk.
No. Nope, that's true. And because it was so expected, it wasn't that depressing. I will admit that the Michael Schumacher to be F1 commissioner rumours did take me aback a little bit, and it's not something that I would relish the prospect of. But Joe on his blog yesterday, I believe, said it's unlikely that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And whilst Jean Todt has definitely said that Schumacher will have a place somewhere, it may or it may not be related to F1. I think the worst case scenario would be if Jean Todt turned around and said, well, my F1 commissioner will be Max Mosley.
Ah, that'd be so funny.
Wouldn't that be a shocker? That would be quite terrible.
Yeah.
That would really, really upset the apple cart, so to speak. There's more to come. Jean will be in office a long time. He's got a lot of things to do, and it looks like he's not that fussed about F1 specifically. He hasn't mentioned that he's going to be doing anything particular.
Well, do you know what I think is weird is that he's in office for about 5 minutes and says, I'm going to appoint someone at the head of every single championship, which makes me wonder either A, what he's going to do if everyone else is doing that work for him,
yep,
or B, how busy was Max?
That's a very good point. I hadn't considered that. The answer to the first question is he's going to delegate, which is something Max never quite got his head around and something that John is very good at. And in terms of how busy Max was, I guess he put a lot of work in. If John is going to replace him with many people, then he must have put the hours in. But sadly, that resulted in him not spending enough time on anything in particular and spreading himself a little bit too thinly.
It is always a bit worrying, though, if you vote... I mean, obviously, we didn't get to vote, but the club's got to vote someone in, and then they turn around and say, actually, we're going to get lots of other people in,
yes,
to do the work, because then they're not actually voting for those people.
The good thing about Mr. Todt was he put out a manifesto, and all this information was available beforehand. So nothing thus far has come as a massive surprise, and therefore, I think I would assume that's why there's less anger or upset at the fact that Ari didn't win it when he had the chance.
Jean Todt did win by quite a big margin, though, 135 votes to Vatanen's 49.
That is a landslide victory.
There were 12 abstentions or invalid votes.
Exclusive!
Ari Vatanen is unhappy and wants a recount.
Does he?
No.
No, not really. Exclusive!
I think he's probably all right, actually.
Oh, good. Okay. Have we heard anything from him?
Well, we haven't heard anything from him, so presumably he's quite gutted.
But no news is good news.
He's probably the same as us, actually, and not surprised at all.
That's true. I did read somewhere that he looked slightly downbeat when he left, and maybe he did think he was in with a chance. But I don't think anyone outside of his camp really believed that. But some people have been happy, though. The messages of support for Jean have been coming in.
Yeah, Fota seemed very upbeat about it. Luca de Montezemolo said, I would like to send my best wishes to Jean Todt in his new role, as I have always appreciated his ability, dedication and commitment. Really? Is that why they fired him?
Well, they disagreed on the merit of Kimi Raikkonen, I believe. That's as I understand it. So you could argue that Jean Todt was actually correct.
Interesting. And John Howitt said, Fota is looking forward to supporting him to broaden the appeal of our sport among fans and sponsors while respecting Formula One's great heritage, to which he has contributed enormously.
Okay, news.
Yes, he really has.
Yeah. It depends how you define contributed, I suppose. News for John Howitt, Jean Todt ain't interested in your sport. That's the vibe I'm picking up. So good luck with getting him to support you.
We mentioned in Good Week, Bad Week about Monaco being moved, and it also seems like the FIA have other 2010 or future plans.
Are they good plans, though?
Well, not in my opinion.
Do fill me in on what's been said.
James Allen seems to be the only person to have picked this up, because I haven't seen it anywhere else.
It's been mentioned on a few blogs, and I did manage to find the actual PDF for some reason. I guess because it's not an FIA press release, it's from the FIA commission, and therefore it ended up in a different place on the FIA's website. So it wasn't immediately apparent that this had been made available. But what did the PDF say?
Well, it's all about how F1 should be going green in the future, which is a common topic. And the FIA want all Grand Prix weekends to be carbon neutral.
Good luck with that.
Which is quite a massive undertaking. I mean, the FIA say they are carbon neutral, don't they?
Yes.
But a Grand Prix weekend, all those people flying in and out, all those laps.
In fairness, the FIA don't send an awful lot of people to races. So therefore, no. It's quite easy for them to be carbon neutral, to insist all the teams do the same. That's asking a lot.
Another thing from James Allen's blog. Also announced today, confirmation that the next engine formula for all FIA championships, including F1, is to be based on gaining power from a fixed volume of fuel rather than from the capacity of the engine as it is at present.
Sounds great from a PR point of view. It also sounds very, very expensive.
Isn't that what they're doing anyway with no refueling?
No. No, that's just you can build as big a fuel tank as you possibly need. Well, you need a fuel tank big enough to get you to the end of the longest race or the biggest. I was fine with that.
Just move along.
The end of the longest race. It doesn't matter how efficient your engine is, but you pay a penalty by having an inefficient engine. In this case, what the FIA are saying is you're going to have a fixed amount of fuel to get to the end of the race, and you have to get there in an efficient manner. It's turning Formula One on its head. I don't know if it's really what racing should be about. However, public opinion requires that something be done, and this is the suggestions that are being put forward.
So is it like that Top Gear race where they all had a certain amount of fuel and had to get as far as they could by
Very much like the Top Gear race. In that race, they were trying to work out which car was the most efficient.
Yeah.
And that what the FIA are suggesting is the car that is the most efficient should win the race. And that's a massive difference from the fastest car with the best driver.
Taking refueling away is bad enough.
Yes, it's just making it worse and worse. But again, the biggest concern is the fact that it's just going to increase costs at a time when Formula One is supposed to be cost cutting. It means that engine manufacturers are going to have to throw away what they've got and start again.
Yeah, well, the other thing is it talks about KERS, which is good that KERS isn't gone yet because they've spent all this money developing it. Very good. But it seems like the flywheel is the preferred option, and only one team has developed that, and they haven't used it yet.
It's never raced. It doesn't appear to work at the moment. It's certainly not a decent enough system to be raced.
James Allen ponders whether Williams would be the ones to create a standard KERS device for the future. But even then, all that work that all the other teams have done is wasted.
Absolutely. All that money that McLaren have put into making the only decent KERS system on the grid, that's going to be thrown out the window. You have to say that I think James Allen's on the right line of thinking there, because Williams are bending over backwards right now to please the FIA. Everything that Williams have done has been essentially what Max would like. And it seems to be that they are positioning themselves in order to be seen as the best team to provide this solution. And technically, you can't argue with it, because the flywheel system does appear to be the better system. The downside is the way that the FIA worded the regulations with the restriction on the weight system and the way the KERS was restricted, it actually denied flywheel a chance to really sort of gain some traction. So it was the FIA that scuppered it, and the FIA that cost all these teams all this money that in most cases has gone to waste, except for with the one exception being McLaren. And now what they're saying is you can throw all that away and just let Williams do it.
Our last section in News and Views is about Abu Dhabi, and it's a bit of a preview because it's a brand new race, so we thought it deserved
first time
a bit of airtime. We have talked about it a lot previously, though.
It does feel, sadly, like the season's done and dusted.
I am so not excited about this at all.
It feels like home time, and I really am not in the least bit bothered. I was far more excited when we first went to Valencia or when we first went to Singapore than I am and the first time we're going to Abu Dhabi, because it does feel like it's just been tacked on the end.
Yeah. F1 Wolf had a great post with a collection of videos and photos of the track. So it's a really good preview post. And I was watching some of the videos, and there's an onboard of Bruno Senna going around the track in one of those not very fast cars.
Two-seater F1, I believe.
Because
it's quite fast.
He drove it slowly. An onboard lap taking 5 minutes.
Yes. It's a fast car. with a very slow Bruno, presumably because they wanted to get the camera shots of how magnificent it all looks.
But it doesn't.
And people didn't want it to be just a blur.
Can I tell you what? I was really disappointed with the bit that goes under the hotel. Because when they first said that, I was like, wow, that's really cool. A bit going under a hotel with the hotel on both sides and meeting in the middle and stuff. And
it's a bridge.
It's just a bridge.
It's the bridge between two hotels.
Yeah.
Can anyone sleep above the track? I don't know if that's possible. What I wanted was the car to go under the hotel.
Like in the underground garage or something.
Like in Monaco.
Yeah.
Where it goes under a hotel.
Yeah.
I don't know how this is like a centerpiece when a race already exists with the same thing in it. I mean, the most controversial point of looking at that video is clearly the pit exit. And it's going to be the flashpoint of the race, isn't it?
Yeah. Everyone has been talking about how worrying it looks because it's very narrow. It's in a bit of a tunnel. It's going around some tight corners.
And is it full racing speed?
Yeah. It just doesn't look very safe at all.
No.
Also,
Stephen, can I just point out, Stephen in the comments said Bruno did 2 laps in 5 minutes, but you may have just assumed it was one very long lap because you know why that is? You can be completely, completely excused from that because it all looks the bloody same, but it won't be in the dark. That's the thing. In the dark, it's going to be red building, blue building, green building, purple building, and you'll know exactly where you are.
Well, you say that, but Singapore is difficult to tell the corners apart.
Yeah, that's true. It's going to be more spectacular than that, though. I'll tell you what might be confusing is the building will change colour between laps. So it'll be red one pass and that'll be green the next pass. I told you, it's like a Christmas tree. It literally is like a gigantic freaking Christmas tree, minus the balls. Lou said another green building, occasionally.
That's not as much
it's
fun,
really
is
hard
it?
To get your head around it, but it's just going to be weird. I'm sure it'll be lovely. I can see their main complaints. I can see the drivers complaining. Mm. If you're picking your points and it starts
changing.
Yeah. Your race markers are different, changing colours.
Also, there are enormous amounts of runoff area.
Yeah.
And it's all very dusty.
That is the modern way. The dust is an interesting point because what you're going to see is one racing line appear and being offline will be treacherous and therefore overtaking. It's going to be hard to come by.
The other thing that we have mentioned before is that it starts at 5 p.m., doesn't it?
Their time or our time?
Their time.
Okay.
So it's like a twilight race and therefore lighting may or may not be an issue.
Well, I think it will sell the place better because as it gets dark, all of the hotels and surrounding buildings light up like a Christmas tree and it will look gorgeous and that will be the highlight of the weekend. The thing I'm most looking forward to is how good the architecture will look by night.
Feedback. Hi guys, it's Chris. So calling from the comments. I thought I'd just send a quick voicemail in response to Gavin and Stephen's message and this week's debrief. They were both talking about safety and the problems with Nico Rosberg. One thing I thought was worth pointing out was that the fault was with the ECU, with Williams, which means that particular fault happens with any car on the grid. I think someone should be punished for that, but I don't think Rosberg or Williams should have been. So I'm happy with the decision, although I do still think someone should get penalised. Hopefully that should spark things off a little bit more. We'll see you in the comments. Great podcast. Keep it up. Bye.
That was a while ago.
Yeah, talking about Japan. I've also got an email about that race as well. But I just wondered where he says someone should have been penalised for that. Does he mean then Mercedes McLaren. Or McLaren because yes. they made
yeah.
the
MES.
ECU?
MES make the ECU. And therefore, they can't be penalised, unfortunately, I don't think, other than having the right to make them and develop them taken away from them. But Chris has a point, and I think Maverick pointed out that when the penalty was not handed to Nico, but the ECU was mentioned, Maverick did say that somehow the FIA still managed to penalise McLaren, even though they had no involvement in it. And Chris is right. This shouldn't be allowed to happen, and it's a flaw in the software, and somebody should take them up on it. And with any luck, it's happening behind closed doors, and it will be fixed next year, because it is a safety issue, and it needs to be addressed.
My email about Japan comes from Mark. He said, "Hi, Christine. I've been listening to your F1 Minute podcast for quite some time, but only recently found Sci Podcast and now listen to most of yours and Mr. C's podcasts. I've been following F1 for many years. I still remember where I was when Senna's death was announced. Not quite sure I can claim every GP in the last 20 years, and many were watched on VHS during the following week, but I count myself a fan. Now to the point. This last weekend in Japan is unlike any I recollect. I really don't remember anybody getting a 5-place drop for speeding under waved yellows, although I am very very happy to be corrected. It's not that I don't agree with the penalty, I do. I feel in quali that it should put the driver at least as far down the grid as if he hadn't made it out of the previous session. I would even suggest it should be a black flag for the weekend. However, either for the first time in, say, 20 years, a bunch of drivers ignored the yellow flag, or someone encouraged the marshals to enforce the rule rigorously. Why would they do that? Hopefully it was because of safety, and this is just the latest push to ensure regs are observed. However, I can't help noticing that the result was that the drivers and probably the manufacturers' championship would be very unlikely to be decided by the race. Just me being paranoid, I thought. Then I listened to your digest following the race. I had obviously noted that Rosberg was investigated and cleared of speeding under the safety car. I share your disbelief about the whole indicator thing, but I also note that A, he was speeding, and B, by not awarding a drive-through, the manufacturers' championship remains undecided. It just feels a bit odd, or perhaps stage-managed. And that's from Mark.
It did feel slightly stage managed.
At the time we had a voicemail from Gavin, didn't we, that yes. was quite depressing.
Yes. It did feel like that, and it felt like the Constructors' Championship was being bumped on a race, even though it was as given as anything can be. And it looked like the championship was trying to be extended. However, the bigger issue is that it's a safety concern and it needs to be addressed. What does sort of come to mind listening to both the voicemail and the email is I think the Suzuka weekend might well be the controversial race of 2009. In 2008
there's always one.
Yeah, in 2008 it was Spa, and in 2007 it was Hungary, and I'm guessing that the Suzuka debate will roll on throughout the off season. When Formula One goes quiet and there's not much to discuss, I'm pretty sure a lot of these questions will be raised again. So if anybody else has further thoughts on this, clearly not too late. Clearly there's more sides of the story to be heard, more thoughts to be had. So please do email us on
Christine@sidepodcast.com
or call us on
01212887225. Okay, now we're going back again to the presidency subject. You just can't escape it this week. Dave sent me an email before the actual elections, and it said, "Hey Christine, Mr. C, just read Autosport's summary of the FIA presidential candidates, and I'm a bit worried that Vatanen hasn't really won in the credibility stakes. The following summed it up for me. Jean Todt's own quote to sum up style of presidency, teamwork. Ari Vatanen's own quote to sum up style of presidency, fair, like my hair. Oh dear." And that's from Dave. So I know it's a bit late.
You love Ari for that, don't you?
It's a bit late, but I had to share that.
It's not going to win him any votes, but that is a fantastic quote.
Hey, Christine and Mr. C, this is Dan Brunel. Hope everything's doing well. I'm sitting here on Sunday night. I just watched a replay of the Brazilian Grand Prix. I know I'm too late for this debrief, but I was going to get the next one. I don't want to review the season before the last race, but there's kind of two central trends that I kind of picked up on for this year that I think are really positive for the sport. I know this year, I mean, I for one have been really kind of depressed with all the politics and everything. But, you know, in a way, with the way Bernie and Max have kind of controlled the sport, we knew that any change from those guys to the next generation of whoever runs the sport was going to be an ugly transition. I know we don't want to talk about the FIA election, but you know, I supported Ari, and I'm disappointed that probably Gene Todt's going to win. He kind of did represent everything I kind of hated about the last 10 years of the sport, where manufacturers kind of put themselves, their PR departments, in making themselves look good in front of proper racing. You know, there is a little glimmer in that he's not Max. And I'm kind of, I don't know if this is a misguided trust, but I'm just hoping that the sport will change. And the second thing is that I find really encouraging on the track this year is that all the independent teams are finally making a comeback. You know, these last 10 years have been really kind of dull because you have teams that are basically line items for auto manufacturers and they're set up for basically publicity purposes and not for proper racing. They don't live the race, like Williams, Benetton, and all the older teams back in the 90s. True, I know these USF ones, Campos, Virgins, and the other teams that are coming in might be just absolutely terrible next year, but at least their goal is in the right place where they're set up for racing. So, I mean, it's been a tough year, but I think things are going to get better because, after all, you know, Bernie's going to be turning 80 pretty soon, and, you know, that, you know, the event, he can't go on forever. You know, he's going to have to retire sometime. And I really just hope, you know, this continued transition in the sport hopefully moves towards something that happened in NASCAR in the 90s, where they kind of brought everything together and really focused on the fans and how can they serve the fans to make the sport larger, better, and more presentable to the world. Anyhow, sorry if that was a little bit rambling. You guys take it easy, and I'll see you in the comments.
You know what's funny about that is that the positives that Dan can take is that he's not Max, and Bernie can't stay around forever.
Right.
Yay.
Well, you have to find your positives in life. One thing I did pick up on is that this has been a really tough year.
Yeah, it really has.
And I don't
it doesn't help that last year was amazing.
Yes. And I don't want to, it's probably a bit too early to do a season review because we have got one race left, but he's right. It's easy to forget.
That
it
race.
It feels like it's home time and it's time to party and the off season.
End of term.
Nope, not at all. One more to come. But Dan is absolutely correct. And that has been a long, long year. But he's right. I'm glad that the smaller teams are coming back, that everybody, the field is so close during qualifying. It's fantastic to see. It's good to see Force India being up there. It's good to see Ferrari drop down for a change. And we'll see what happens next year. Long may it continue.
Changing the subject completely now, I've had an email from Paul. He said, Christine, it's odd writing an email to someone who I've listened to a lot, but who has no idea who I am. Of course I do. You're Paul. I've been listening to the podcast since I got my first iPod at the beginning of the year and love it. Podcasts are the new love of my life and are probably the sole reason I didn't stop watching F1 altogether. Yay. Anyway, having started like a stalker, sorry, and gone on to rant, sorry again, I'll come to the point. I download podcasts via iTunes and over the last month or so, I've noticed that your downloads stop after a few seconds and the time remaining starts to count upwards. The only way I have found to get the download going again is to click pause and then resume. This causes the download to continue for another 2 or 3 seconds before stopping again. As an example, while downloading the recent Forgotten F1 Teams podcast, I had to pause resume about 20 times.
Yikes.
This doesn't happen with any other podcast I subscribe to. Can you shed any light on this or help in any way? Keep up the great work, Paul.
Can do. And hopefully have temporarily fixed. So without getting too technical, we have been using a company called Blip TV, who are our content partners and do our hosting for audio and video podcasts for the last... maybe
long time,
six to 8 months, I would suggest. And the reason we do that is we send out somewhere in the region of 2.5 terabytes of data every single month, where a lot of stuff gets downloaded by a lot of people, and that would potentially cost us a lot of money. So we use an alternative backup provider to give us an extra 1.5 terabytes of data at a price we can afford, and we have been using Blip TV for that purpose. At some point during the last couple of weeks, I guess it might be a little bit before that, but very recently they've changed their policy of download speeds in order to burst the first bit and then make the second bit really slow. So pausing and resuming makes it go really quick and then really slow, and then you pause it and then you resume. And the theory behind what they've done is that they've tailored it to watching video online, whereby you need quite a bit buffered to start with, and then you just watch the video and it just slowly catches up, which is great if you're watching a video online. It's not so good if you want to download it to your podcatcher. So we stopped using them basically at the moment, and I think this show and the Aside with Joe show will not go on there, and you should hopefully not have issues with these two later shows, because lots of people have complained and have seen this problem. And we can repeat the problem.
Even my dad was complaining.
Everybody has been giving us grief. And so we have to solve it. And we basically have to find us a new partner without going bankrupt in the process. So we have to take it out. And so for older shows, we'll still have issues. And we'll try and find somebody else, because Blip TV have changed their policy, I think, to the detriment of their service. And I suspect they will suffer as a result. But that's what they've decided to do. And now we have to find somebody else.
Also, there is a donate button on the homepage.
Oh, yes, which will help us with server and streaming costs. I don't think donations could ever cover the massive amount of data we send out if we paid for it individually, all on our own, because it's a huge amount of content we're sending out, and it'll get worse because we keep making more and more shows and we have more and more ideas, and it all costs more and more money. So we need to find an alternative provider, and that's on my list of to-do things in the off-season.
My final voicemail, though, is on a positive note, and it's from Dap.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. E and everybody inside podcast land. This is Dap calling once again. I just wanted to put out a big thanks. You've been putting out so much content lately, I haven't been able to follow it all. But what I'd also like to say is I've been really inspired with your ongoing series of plugging and doing interviews about bloggers. So inspired, in fact, especially by Gavin, and a good shout out, I decided to start my own, so I thought I'd just give you a heads up. It's called Nippon Drive. It's on WordPress at Nippon Drive. That's N-I-P-P-O-N drive.wordpress.com. And basically, in a nutshell, it's just me trying to write and blog about my experiences in driving, well, trying to get a license at the moment, and all forms of motorsport and automotive life in Japan. It doesn't have a lot of posts yet, but there are a bunch more coming down the pipe. I just did one about the Motorsport Japan Festival with a little bit of F1 action. So please take a read if you're interested, and I hope everybody can get something useful out of it. And please let me know how I'm doing by posting a comment. I haven't had a single one yet, so I'd really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, and I hope to hear from you sometime soon. Bye.
Aw, not a single comment.
Must start commenting
there. We need to solve that one. Well, off-season's coming up.
Mm.
Good excuse for Must Comment Monday to return.
Yes.
And we have lots and lots of new bloggers with blogs to promote and comments to be made. So nippondrive.wordpress.com. I will check it out after the show.
Housekeeping.
We have some quite exciting housekeeping this week. Our first piece is we're going to do our very first competition.
This is a first.
Yes.
Never before. Not we've had training competitions, but they were challenges. There weren't no
prizes.
There
was no prize.
No. What have we got coming up?
We have a competition to see Top Gear live.
In the UK?
Yes.
And this is the show with Jeremy Clarkson, James May, and the little guy.
Yep, let me tell you more about it.
Okay.
We have teamed up with Shell V-Power. They're the lovely people that took us to see free practice at the British GP, and we did a whole Shell V-Power challenge.
It was a summer challenge.
Yep. They are the title sponsor of MPH featuring Top Gear Live. We're offering one listener the chance to win tickets for two to MPH featuring Top Gear Live. The lucky winner and his or her guest will enjoy a behind-the-scenes paddock tour where they'll get to go backstage and meet with the show's stunt drivers. The winner will have the opportunity to experience the power and performance of Shell V-Power whilst riding in the stunt car during the Top Gear Live show. Now,
that
show is on the 8th of November.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
What a competition.
In the stunt car.
Well, I'll tell you something. As an opening competition, that sets a pretty high benchmark
in
side podcast terms. Okay, it's going to happen this week. And the most important thing to say is that V-Power are doing a big push across the web. So a lot of car blogs and car sites will likely be running this competition. But if you enter the competition through side podcast, you are only up against other people
from side podcast.
From side podcast.
Like little pools, isn't
it? It's a very, very small pool, and you stand a pretty good chance, I would say, of winning, because we don't have a huge audience by comparison to some of the larger car sites and the people who else will be running this competition. So firstly, thank you to V-Power, because I initially expected them to say it's just a big pool of competition winners and somebody will win it somewhere in the country from some other site or whatever. But actually, no, it's just for side podcast listeners to enter, and will it be a question?
Is what we're going to do is we're going to post a blog entry about it on sidepodcast.com tomorrow, Monday. Okay. And there'll be a question and a form for you to fill in, and then we will decide the winner, I guess.
Oh, yes. And what's the date again? One more time. It's the very date, soon, isn't it?
Yeah, the date of the Top Gear Live show is the 8th of November, and I believe it is at Earl's Court, is it?
Okay.
At London?
I know as much information as you've just told me.
There'll be more information in the post anyway.
It's a bit last minute, and hopefully we had hoped to get it sorted over the weekend, but it will now be Monday, and the competition will therefore only be open for about a week and a couple of days. So, I mean, get going. Keep an eye out for it. Keep refreshing the site until it goes up, and get your entry in. The question will be doable, right? It's I'm sure it's researchable.
I think, and it's so not one of those silly ITV questions, but also it's not ridiculously complicated.
No.
Because if I'm asking the question, you know it's going to be answerable.
So it will be oh, you're asking the question. Oh, fantastic. Sadly, I don't think I'm eligible to enter.
Nope.
I might be tempted. But thank you again to V-Power, because they are a fantastic bunch of people. And it does sound like a brilliant thing. And I do believe, we'll have to check out, but I'm pretty sure some people from the comments went last year. So maybe we'll see if we can hassle them to tell us what it was like and what goes on there, because neither you nor I have ever been to that show.
The other exciting news this week is that our homepage, Sidepodcast 3.0, is well on the way, isn't it? We've been waiting for about a year.
Finally happening, rather embarrassingly, just before the last race of the year.
Yeah.
And I would have been gutted if it if it hadn't actually gone out before then. If we just if the off season had arrived and then, oh look, we've got a new website that no one's going to look at.
Yes.
The plan is it's not finished. It's not ready. It's, I would suggest, 60% ready in terms of functionality, and then we're going to make it look nice when we've got time.
Basically, what you've done is stripped everything back down to the basics. So the blog is there and all the about page and archives and everything. And we're trying to make everything much more streamlined, so there's less manual entering for us. So quite a lot of the changes you won't actually notice. But what we're then going to do is build on top of that. And there'll be more functionality and it will look a lot better, because at the moment it's basically white and black text.
But it's really fast.
But it's very fast.
It's very fast. And also the other thing that it'll do for us is it should reduce our server costs a little bit. So if you give us donations, the money won't be wasted, because we're making it the site as efficient as humanly possible. We're going to great lengths to make it really, really quick. And that's really where the emphasis is on this, on the rollout of the new site. So if you come to Side Podcast after Wednesday this week, you might be in for a little bit of a shock, because the homepage will no longer be green.
No, there's a little note on there that says, why does this page look weird? Because we're working on it.
Yes, because we haven't finished it and we are working really hard. The other thing is, I would like to experience how it performs during a race weekend.
Yeah.
Because during some of the live sessions, we get between 400 and 500 people joining us simultaneously, and at no point during the next 4 months will we get that opportunity to see it until the season gets going again, because the off season is naturally very quiet. And so we'd like to see it really put to the test this weekend.
So after all our moaning, it's actually quite helpful that there is one more race to come then.
Because, oh yeah, because it would work out quite well for us.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Bernie.
There you go.
My complaints are null and void. If you're around, if you listen to this show and you haven't yet joined us for a race weekend, I think Abu Dhabi would be a good place to start for first timers, because it's going to
be new for everybody.
Out. Yeah, it'll be new for everybody. It'll be chilled out. It'll be relaxed. There's essentially very little to play for this coming weekend. And we'll be live commenting all sessions, as always, followed by another debrief next Sunday.